Welcome back to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. You've heard from the oil and gas industries many times that President Obama is stifling domestic energy production. In fact, just this week, Utah's entire congressional delegation demanded that Interior Secretary Ken Salazar reverse a decision to reduce the public lands available for oil shale development in the West. But a new report from the independent research group Headwaters Economics suggests all this talk of oil and gas production being stifled may just be rhetoric, not reality. Joining me in the studio to discuss it is Headwaters economist Mark Haggerty. Mark, it's good to have you here.
Thank you.
And we're also glad to have Matt Garrington. He is co-director of the Checks and Balances Project, a nonprofit organization aimed at holding government officials, lobbyists, and corporate management accountable to the public. Matt, thank you for being here as well.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
And Mark and Matt, before we get to the specifics of your new white paper there at Headwaters Economics, let's start off by having you both briefly give our listeners a sense of exactly what your organizations do. Mark, first tell us about Headwaters.
Headwaters Economics is a small nonprofit independent research firm out of Bozeman, Montana. There are seven of us on staff. We are very interested and have a longstanding research record in how public resources, public lands and natural resources affect the economy of the West, in particular rural areas. We've done a lot of work on oil and natural gas since about 2007. Mm-hmm. We've also looked extensively at travel and tourism and amenity migration, or the new economy, as we like to call it, of people moving to the West attracted by the value and the amenities around them and bringing jobs and wealth with them.
And Matt, tell us a little bit about Checks and Balances and kind of the mission of what you do.
Sure. Our goal is really to provide a counterweight to the rhetoric from industry and politicians around energy issues, specifically public lands, development issues in the West, and things like energy subsidies.
So, Mark, let's dive right into your new report. How much oil and natural gas production is happening here in Utah? How well is it going compared to previous years? You really took a hard look at the numbers there, and what did you find?
Well, since the recession, Utah is recovering quite well, not only for the state, but also relative to its peers. Oil production in the state is at a 20-year high. And natural gas is back at levels that were seen previous to the recession that started in 2008 for the natural gas and oil industries. So that's a positive trend for Utah. The only other state that has an increase in production since the recession is North Dakota, and North Dakota is experiencing a pretty tremendous shale oil boom right now. So Utah is actually doing quite well, and the oil component of new drilling in Utah is boosting the state. States that are more dependent just on natural gas, like Wyoming and Colorado and New Mexico, have not yet recovered since the recession, largely due to the fact that natural gas prices remain low while oil prices have recovered much better.
So does this have something to do with Utah's regulatory environment or lack thereof, that we seem to be doing much better than these other states?
Well, the short answer is that we didn't look at that for this brief. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a definitive answer on whether or not regulations are playing a large role. Anecdotally, we don't think that regulations are as important, and I'll tell you why. We've tracked the movement of drilling rigs from state to state across the West, and the main driver of industry investment and where drilling rigs are moving is essentially price and technology to access these new unconventional oil and natural gas resources. And we see that as plays become valuable, both because prices are high and also because the drilling technology, the horizontal drilling and fracking is perfected, then the rigs move to those places quite easily. There doesn't seem to be a lot of friction. And we look more specifically at tax rates, and we find very little evidence, and in fact, there's quite a bit of research coming out that suggests that tax rates, variable tax rates between states, have very little, if any, impact on where the oil and gas industry chooses to invest.
So, Matt, I guess this data kind of supports your organization's point that, you know, maybe the oil and gas industry says the sky is falling and that federal burdensome regulations are stifling energy development, but perhaps that's not really the case?
Clearly, the oil and gas industry is, you know, doing quite well. You know, as Mark just mentioned, things are up in Utah from a production standpoint. If we look at drilling nationwide, we're actually at the highest level of drilling activity since President Reagan was in office. So from a standpoint of, you know, is drilling activity moving forward in the U.S., the answer is yes. In fact, North Dakota just surpassed the OPEC state of Ecuador in terms of oil production.
Mm-hmm. Mark, going back to the report, you were talking about, you know, the severance tax. You compared Utah's severance tax, the tax that's levied on oil and gas drillers, that goes right into state coffers, to the surrounding states. How large is Utah's compared to, say, Colorado, Wyoming, and the other states?
Yeah, we looked at all production taxes that go to both state and local governments. So it includes the severance tax, but also property taxes mm-hmm. on oil and gas activity and production, and sales taxes on the drilling activity. Through oil and gas extraction. And looking across five states, Colorado, Montana, North Dakota, Utah, and Wyoming, Utah has the lowest effective tax rate, which essentially means you collect the least amount of value from the same amount of production relative to your peers.
So there was an effort, I believe, last year in the legislature to raise the severance tax here in Utah, but immediately, you know, the oil and gas industry said this would cause production to go elsewhere. This would stifle energy development. Does your research lead you to believe that's not the case, that Utah could, in fact, bringing in more revenue without losing economic activity?
We think that's exactly the case. And when we look around the West and even at Alaska, it's pretty clear that the states that have the highest tax rates also have the greatest share of production and the most drilling activity going right now. So there's no correlation. That's not causation, but there's a growing body of research to try to understand why that is. And the most interesting research recently came out of Wyoming. And the Wyoming legislature was doing exactly what Utah's legislature was trying to do, understand how they could use taxes mm-hmm. to try to boost oil and gas production in the state. And they granted a 2% reduction against severance taxes. But in the same legislation that provided the incentive, they funded a study through the University of Wyoming to understand how it would work. And the study came back a year later and essentially said that it wouldn't. And one of the interesting reasons is that your state severance tax liability is deductible from your federal corporate income tax mm-hmm. liability. So Utah having lower taxes doesn't necessarily mean that the industry as a whole pays lower taxes, but it does mean that Utah is shipping at least some of its potential revenue to Washington, D.C.
Very interesting. This is Politics Up Close here on KCBW. I'm speaking with Headwaters economics economist Mark Haggerty and also Matt Garrington, who is co-director of the Checks and Balances Project. And Mark, regarding the economic activity that oil and gas generates in the state, which we frequently talk about with policymakers, the report says in 2010, mining jobs made up less than 1% of all jobs in Utah. Is it really that few, that, you know, insignificant?
It's actually smaller than that. All mining together is less than 1% of total employment, and oil and gas extraction specifically is only 0.1%. So as the state as a whole, it is small, but we have to remember that it is still important. It tends to pay wages that are higher than the average across the state, and in the areas where the extraction is taking place in the few counties around the state that have the drilling rigs, it can be much more important. But from a statewide perspective, it is important but small.
Matt, coming back to you, Checks and Balances looked at a bill proposed by Representative Doug Lamborn of Colorado in Congress called the Pioneers Act to provide 2 million acres of public lands for the purpose of oil shale leasing. But you say this would actually provide zero revenues for the federal government, and a new study from the Congressional Budget Office agrees. How could it provide zero revenues? Curious.
Well, I think first is to explain that oil shale isn't actually oil or shale. It's a rock found in the West made of kerogen, and it is a very inefficient resource. So it takes an incredible amount of energy to develop oil shale, and no company has been able to find a way to develop oil shale economically. So, you know, this is a resource that's been just around the corner for the last 100 years. And you can go back and look at newspapers from the 1930s where they were saying how it was going to transform America's energy future in 100 years, you know, later we're still having, you know, the same conversation. So the Lamborn bill really is more about speculation in oil shale. And the CBO took an honest assessment as to whether or not it would generate revenues. And CBO said that over between 2012 and 2022, it would generate zero revenues for the federal government. So the bill is currently part of a larger package for funding transportation, but that bill provides zero revenue as part of that package.
So, Matt, I'm curious, when you take this data, when you take the studies that your organization has done and present them to other organizations, what kind of reaction do you get? I imagine if you were to testify up at the Utah legislature, you might be labeled an environmental extremist, certainly a term I've heard many times up there. How much success have you had, you know, trying to get people to pay attention to what you're doing?
Well, I think there is a huge need to be able to see other viewpoints on energy development right now. And we don't actually necessarily take an environmental approach, but more kind of an honest assessment of, you know, what are politicians saying and what is industry saying and where are we with oil and gas development, or is oil shale actually a viable source? And, you know, I think folks are actually very responsive when we, you know, see these conversations play out in the public debate. Our organization doesn't get involved in state legislative issues, though.
Mm-hmm. One organization that has some sway here in Utah and surrounding states and is based in Denver, where I believe you are as well, is the Western Energy Alliance, formerly the Intermountain Petroleum. I can't remember the exact name.
Formally, Association of Mountain States.
There we go. Yep. Formerly IPAMS. We're actually speaking with a representative of their organization next week, but this is a group that lobbies for you know, the oil and gas industry for more favorable regulations. But I noticed that you have several blog posts on your site critiquing the organization and kind of separating the myths from the facts. So tell us about this group and your perspective on what they do.
Sure. Western Energy Alliance is big on hype and big on rhetoric, and they're a little shallow when it comes to the facts. You know, they've got a very clear agenda, which is to shape what the debate looks like around energy in the sense of kind of a sky is falling. You know, the oil and gas industry is struggling, and therefore we, you know, need more government handouts. We need, you know, more access to public lands, even though the oil and gas industry is sitting on millions of acres of land that's leased for oil and gas development, not using it.
So overall, what do you think is the most pervasive myth about oil and gas production in Western states that you've come across so far?
The most pervasive myth is that somehow America isn't tapping into the energy resources that we have. I mean, the United States is a energy leader. We have an incredibly healthy oil and gas industry right now. You know, we lead the world in the amount of drilling activity that's happening, and production is up not just you know, region-wide, but nationally when it comes to oil and gas. So the biggest myth out there is that we're not tapping into our domestic energy resources, and the fact is we're a world leader in oil and gas production.
Mark Haggerty with Headwaters Economics. You know, following the publication of this new study on the oil and gas industry in Utah, are there any specific policy goals that your organization has, or is it just pretty much presenting the facts and letting policymakers do what they will with the data?
Yeah, we prefer to leave the politics to the experts. Our hope and ambition is that the information that we provide will allow decision makers to make more informed decisions.
But do you get the sense right now that perhaps they're not making decisions based on the facts?
I don't know. that's not a question that I'm really prepared to answer.
I mean, I would probably say that most decisions made in politics is about gamesmanship and who's has the most political power at the time. So I think there is a great need to inject some reality into the political debate so we make wiser decisions about what policies are enacted.
All right. We've been speaking with Matt Garrington. He is co-director of the Checks and Balances Project. Matt, thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thank you.
And Mark Haggerty, he is an economist with Headwaters Economics, just released a white paper on the oil and gas industry in Utah. And Mark, thank you for your time as well.
Thank you.
This is Politics Up Close here on KCBW.